Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Pro Savings Days are on at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, MyLowe's Pro Rewards members get an additional 5% off when you buy 5 or more select GE, Whirlpool, and Electrolux kitchen or laundry major appliances. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 123. Discount valid to MyLowe's Pro Rewards members only. Exclusions and other restrictions apply. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for details. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Clocks Running, the podcast for everything flag football officials. I'm Ant.
What's going on? I'm Jiggy. You threw me off with that. You changed it.
You changed it on me last week because The first time you did it, you said, I'm Jacob. And then the second time you said, I'm the co-host. So then I felt bad because I was like, I want us to be on even playing field. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to take out host. But I guess I should have warned you about it.
Sorry, I got something for you next week. Just wait, I got next week. Don't worry about it.
Wow, that's crazy. All right, cool. So here's the thing, man. What I've noticed a pattern of is that you and me both, we're having trouble with the whole food, regional foods. And so you messed up with clam chowder.
Let's not use the word mess up. Mess up is a understatement.
Okay. You insulted all of New England by saying that you don't like clam chowder.
Okay.
I insulted the entire city of Philadelphia by describing the cheesesteak that I like to make in the past. Yep. But our next stop is the DMV. Now, before we bring our guest on, can we talk about this first before we insult anybody? Like, what is the food of the DMV? I don't know. So do you know what the food of the DMV is?
In the Baltimore area, crab legs, man. They're famous for the crab legs.
Okay, so all right. Huh?
Do you like crab?
Yeah, crabs are cool.
Cool. What are you, like, friends with them? You know, like, have, like, a hangout with them? Hey, guys, we're
going to
watch the game, and they're
going to
eat you. No, man, they're
great. Okay, but is crab cakes specific to that, too, or?
We'll have to ask our guest. I'm not.
All right, cool. Well, let's bring our guest on, and we'll get to the bottom of this. What up, Mike?
What up? Yeah, you're off a little bit on the whole crab leg. It's not crab legs, it's the crabs, the Maryland blue crabs.
There you go. See, yeah. I was in the ballpark.
Yeah, it's the blue crabs. And the crab cakes, yes, we're famous for crab cakes. Do not eat a crab cake outside of a 50-mile radius of Maryland, D.C. Depends on what part of Virginia.
Oh, okay. So crab cakes were that's where they were made famous. Correct. You don't want to mess with them anywhere else.
Don't mess with them anywhere else. I mean, you can. I mean, but I've had them. I stopped ordering. Let's just put it that way. Yeah, you can't give me a crab cake in another state. Not anymore.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good to know. I've had crab cakes, but I haven't had them in that area. So I guess I gotta try them the next time I'm in the
deal. Yeah. I'd recommend trying them.
For sure. So. Mike, we just want to give you the opportunity every time we have a new guest on, just a chance to kind of share your origin story. I saw your Thor's hammer, so you know about Marvel. Every superhero has an origin story, so I just want you to be able to share yours what got you into flag football and what brought you to your point here today?
Yeah, sure. So Mike Holmes, born and raised in the DMV area. I started playing flag football when I was 19. And actually, Craig came to a group of friends and said, hey, you know, do you want to get together and play some flag football? And we're like, sure, you know, it's something to do. It's we're 19. We're adults now. We don't really have anything extracurricular activities per se besides drinking. We got a team together of friends. And we our first season, I think we went 7-3 and finished, like, tied for first. And they got our asses kicked the first game of the playoffs. But that kind of gave a taste of the competition. And we're like, all right, this might be fun. And then it was – it got to the point where we weren't going to win as friends. So we had to find a way to, I don't want to say cut friends because that's a tough word, but we brought in some other people and then people went their different ways. And then we started different teams and that's kind of where it all started about 19 years, you know, we're 19 years old.
Gotcha. So from playing flag football, what made you transition into where you are today? And what are you doing today with flag football?
Today, I'm really locally not really doing anything locally anymore except, you know, consulting on a, you know, here and there basis. Life has just gotten busy and it's more of the national where we go to the world out of the East Coast Nationals. But locally now it's not really – I'm a little bit older now. I don't have the time to dedicate to it like I used to. The game has changed a lot. The people that are involved in the game are, I don't know that the flag football in the DMV state is in a very good spot, just in my opinion. We're predominantly 8-man contact, as everybody knows, and we've got the best teams in the world, 8-man contact. Problem is that not many more areas have 8-man contact or they're dying, right? So not a lot of teams travel for 8-man anymore here. It's all local. Every once in a while, there'll be a team, but we used to get teams that traveled, you know, 20 years ago when we had the Metro Cup or 25 years ago when George Coleman used to run it. I mean, we'd had teams from all over the country travel, come and play. Doesn't happen anymore. So the contact, 8-man contact has just changed a lot. And that's kind of where I am now currently now is I just don't really not really super involved with it as much.
I got so when you started playing, what made you and Craig say, hey, let's get a league together, let's put this together and form what you guys did with the DMVFFL?
Well, the area was saturated with 8-man leagues as it kind of is today for the most part, and Craig and I somebody invited us to play like 4-man non-contact, right, and 5-man contact, and we started playing. I'm like, damn, this is actually pretty fun, right? So there was no 4 or 5-man contact league in this area, it wasn't offered. So Craig and I just came in just to do 4-man and 5-man, and somebody reached out to us and said, hey, can you guys run an 8-man league? And we're like, I guess, you know, we'll throw it out there. And we had eight teams in it. Some teams left from other leagues and joined it, and kind of grew from there. But you know, the small ball 4 and 5-man, we kind of, you know, brought that to this area. There were some people before that did stuff like George Hall, and he used to have All About the Benjamins tournament. I mean, we're talking years ago. That he probably is one of the few that started it, but didn't necessarily know how to run it per se. From a league perspective, he ran tournaments, a lot of tournaments. So Craig and I decided let's do the leagues, and then it kind of just grew from there.
Guys, now I grew up playing 8-man in Colorado. So I played 8-man contact in Colorado. The big tournament that we had and at the cap, I mean, it was not anything close to what the East Coast does, but we had best of the best. And I remember that there was never an East Coast team that came out to that tournament. At some point, Main Event found out about it, and they came and they took it over. They won 3 years in a row. But I understand from now traveling as an official to the East Coast that contact is very different in the East Coast compared to what, you know, what I experienced. Do you think that's just because there's so many, you know, it's been around for so long there, or, you know, what makes the East Coast so good at contact?
So the East Coast contact is on a whole different level than everywhere else, right? And you notice it when you go to national tournaments and you see the East Coast, or more so the DMV than anybody, honestly, how they approach pulling a flag, right? Or how they approach blocking somebody is totally different than somebody, let's just say, even North Carolina, right? North Carolina wasn't on the DMV level. However, they're in order to get past the DMV, they're going to have to play the DMV team. So they started to get on that level. They started to be more contact with them, right? And it was kind of infectious, right? However, not saying it's right, because it's just how we played, right? It was always, as long as you came up with the flag, there was no penalty, right? And we still say that today. That's not saying the truth, right? We know that as being a referee. You can't just plow through somebody and pull the flag and it's okay. But that's what we were taught growing up, right? But we always, you know, you're talking now, you know, 8-man's my first love, and 8-man is probably still my first love. I've always loved 8-man. We would literally destroy each other, you know, with the hits that you see today, and get up and dap up and like, good hit, you know what I mean? It was legal. Well, to us it was legal, but it wasn't anything like dirty. Today, and it's not just the DMV, but it's everywhere. Like, you can't hit like that without there's some initiation back, or I want to fight, or I'm going to go to my car, I'm going to do this. Like, you don't have that anymore. Like, you back in the day, you got me. All right, dap up, good hit. I'm going to get you next play. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's not the way that it is today. So I think taking a lot of that contact out of the game now is very crucial to the growth of any contact league, whether or not it's 5-man, whether or not it's 6-man, whether or not it's 8-man, because DMV is going to play contact the way we've always played it. It doesn't matter what if you play 1-man, 2-man, 3-man, 4-man, it does not matter, right? However, it does initiate additional interaction. So you can shut tournaments down. You know what I mean? And that's what we're trying to alleviate. Not saying that non-contact doesn't, because there are issues with non-contact. Any sport that's competitive is going to bring out a little bit more fire in person than not competitive. You know what I mean? Any team sport, and, you know, you hit my guy, I want to hit you back. You know what I mean? So I think DMV laid the groundwork of what it was and how it was back in the day. I just think it's gone a little bit too far now.
Yeah, definitely. So I think some of the biggest things, if you think about who were some of the biggest teams that kind of laid the brickwork? You know, obviously, we can agree that Judah, you're being, you know, as you're the founder of Judah, or one of the founders of Judah, that being one of the teams. What would you say some of the other teams that laid the groundwork for us to have contact the way it is?
So Judah wasn't a team that laid the foundation for contact, right? So we can't take claim to that. It started with 8-man, right? It started back in the day before, you know, Judah, Mike Holmes was probably even born, right? Football, flag football and DMV has been around a long time. It used to be touch. And can you imagine two-hand touching somebody that's got the ball? I mean, can you imagine how hard that two-hand touch is going to be? And then it went to flag, right? So the people that I grew up with, the people that we always looked up to, were like the Cutters, you know, Dominion, and even like, you know, Allmet, when it was before it was AMC or before it was Decode. They were after Cutters. But those were always like the cream of the crop of the air, the DC Dolphins. I mean, I'm going to probably miss a few, but Brothers AC. Then you go back before that, like New Breed. I mean, there's this area has a very, very, very well tradition. Judah just came in afterwards and tried to respect the game and the players that came before us. You know, we looked up to playing the Cutters. We were a C team, you know, playing in A tournaments to get better. You know, I mean, we took our lumps. I mean, we beat the Cutters before. We're like 1-1 against them. That's you asked Craig, because Craig picked off probably the best quarterback to ever play the game. But and so, yeah, it's his like claim to fame. But you know, we looked up to those guys. We beat that team, and the next week we turned around and played them in the Metro Cup, and they stomped the mud hole in us, right? So, but that was the only way for us to get better. And I'll segue into the next thing, because I think this is very important. There is a lot of sandbagging nowadays. No one wants to be good. No one wants to be the best, right? So everyone wants to go home with, say, hardware or, you know, money or whatever it happens to be, but is afraid to do it at the highest level versus going there, holding your head up, getting your ass kicked, taking your lumps and becoming better, right? I don't know about you, but where I grew up, I mean, you got to play the best to be the best, right? You can't be the best playing rec ball. You can't be the best playing comp. You can't be the best unless you're playing pro and you're playing against the best. But right. unfortunately, with social media today, that's all you see is the rec players, the comp players, you know, talking nonstop shit about everything. You don't see a lot of that from the pro players. The pro players don't get on. There's a difference. You know, I mean, there's levels to this. The pro players aren't out there, you know, talking stuff. I mean, but they – you can see the maturity level, you know, of it and the growth and where they want to be. And I unfortunately, as being a commissioner, we'll say, or a director, you know, through the years, it's very tough to force people to move up because how can you tell people how to spend their money?
Right.
So you're in a very fine line. I mean, we had a very good system in the DMVFFL was I made all the schedules. So I always had a way of making sure that the lesser teams got wins, but also got challenged, right? I wouldn't take the worst team in the league and play against the best team in the league, but I'd play them against a mediocre team so they can actually get some experience and kind of, you know, get better. But they'd also play some other teams that are a little bit around their level so they can get some wins. And, you know, winning is contagious. Doesn't matter who you win against, right? So, yeah, I mean, that's
– I think the biggest thing, and Mike, I think you were kind of on your way out as I was more like on my way in and kind of in the thick of when I was playing. But back in those days, it wasn't nationals. The tournaments were open. You know, as far as like, take five entrants. Let's use five entrants.
Yep.
Five contact. It was an open bracket. You would have teams like RDU, Judah, Stick of Butter. I'm thinking, you know, more like Carolina times. Playing against my team. My team's like below rec. You know, we go out there and it's like you said, we get our face stomped in, but you get the reps against these better teams. That's the only way you get better. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you've got to have 2-3 divisions. So would you say that it's a league-ish, like locally-ish? Like, how am I trying to say this? A local issue that's promoting this to where teams aren't moving up versus, you know, just the teams just doing it themselves.
So 5-man is a little tricky, right? Because there's not enough teams to make multiple divisions, right? So you don't have a choice but to have one division, right? You don't want to have 5-1 and 6-1, you know, I mean, or 6-1 and 12 in another. I mean, you can essentially, but if you schedule it right, you know what I mean? And your prize denominations or your awards and however you do it right. It still gives some of those lesser teams an opportunity to walk out with something, right?
Sure.
But that's the problem with the 5-man. It's never we've never had enough to have two separate divisions, right? We have an abundance of 8-man teams, and I mean there are multiple people or organizations have merged because there's just not enough teams now to go around. In my opinion, we still have enough right now. So it is consolidating down, and now that. Flag World is on the scene, and now that it's the Olympic sport, and now they're seeing the stuff, more players are going to be tending to go towards that non-contact. And people don't realize this, that now, say you have a bunch of 25, 30-year-olds in your league, right, that play that have kids. They're playing non-contact. You know what I mean? That's how they're growing up, and that's what they're mm-hmm. going to grow into in their adulthood, not contact. You know what I mean? So it's just a matter of time where eight man is going to become a local league only, or everyone's going to have to attend every event kind of like 9-man, right? So 9-man throws, you know, several, you know, they have a good following. And, you know, what Jamie and Zarek and Dimitri and all them did over there was created a group of, let's just say, 50 9-man teams. They throw tournaments sporadic throughout the country, right? Or in mostly East Coast for the most part, right? And 30 teams attend, right? But they have 5 or 6 a year. 8-man's going to end up being the same way. You know what I mean? Where someone's going to have to take 8-man and do the same exact thing because right now no one's traveling anyways besides nationals. There's nowhere to play. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Ohio doesn't have the you have Tatum, I think he has to stop the violence every single year. Those mm-hmm. aren't super, super great numbers for 8-man. You know what I mean? There's 8-man right. tournaments around here. The only numbers that we're getting are really local, right? So right. it's going to become, in my opinion, it's going to become a local thing. For a few different reasons, and one of them is that everything is gravitating towards non-contact, just because of where, you know, not just what flag rules do, international. You know what I mean? I mean, there's too much liability in contact, for real. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not saying there's no liability in non-contact. The liability in contact, obviously, raises
you're borderline asking for it.
Correct. You know what I mean? And this day and age, you know, back then we didn't have social media to hype things up where, you know, I mean, and really fights start on social media. I think in East Coast Nationals one year, we had a fight start pre-fight start on social media, which ended up on the field. Mm-hmm. Right. It's crazy to think about, yep. But back then we couldn't talk shit like I'm gonna burn this bum or I'm gonna do this or whatever. And then I see it and like, okay, you know what I mean? And you go out in the field and you do something about it. Everything was talked about at that moment, and it just, we moved on with life. But that's just my opinion when it comes to where contact is going. We got to clean up the game and respect the game. And if we don't, then I think that's just going to end up being a local thing.
Is there something that you think could change as far as in the rule book of eights? I mean, I know nine man uses poppers. Do you think that eights could eventually go to poppers to help, you know, eliminate extinction or avoid extinction?
God forbid, my phone will probably go crazy after I say this. but I've been an advocate for poppers for 10 years. I think for a few different reasons, right? Unfortunately, eight man is stuck in their ways, and it's mostly the DMV. It's mostly the old heads that are like, don't change our game, don't do this, don't do that. They don't really want to evolve. Well, not evolving is going to end up having you not being able places to play, right? I think that having the poppers, it's easier to know when a player's flag actually got pulled. It's easier for the ref to make the call versus the belt kind of sticking into the shorts or under the belly or what have you. It's easy. You just pull the flag and you raise it up, right? However, they're going to argue there's going to be more contact. And you have people say there's less contact. I think everything should go to one uniform style. And right now, the only holdup to all this is eight-man contact. And I do believe that I think you just got to move on without it. Just keep doing it. And then, I mean, they're either going to join it or they're not. They're kind of killing themselves now by not doing things. So let it be what it's going to be. If they want to evolve with the game, then that's the way that it should be.
Do you think they'll ever come around to wanting to conform to it, or do you think it'll be too little too late and they'll just be left by the wayside?
I think generation has to pass. You know what I mean? I think you have to get into more people that are playing small ball and that are used to the poppers. Because, like I said, you still have the old heads that are still in there, right? Right. Eight-man's not growing. Eight-man used to grow organically like wildfire. Our league used to have 25 teams in our league, and then 10 of those teams would break off, and now there'd be 20 teams, right? Because whatever, somebody's not getting playing time, whatever. Those leagues aren't growing organically anymore. They're consolidating teams. There's teams out there that are picking the best players off of certain teams, and the other teams are folding, right? So do I think that they're going to? I think generation has to pass, or time has to pass when the old heads are out, and the people that are playing multiple styles, and the only style they're playing with triple threats are eight-man, then I think it will go into the pop. That's my opinion, how it's going to fall out. Then again, I mean, one never knows with eight-man.
As far as just in the DMV, the leagues in that area, do they work together at all? Do they have, you know, are the rules similar, or is it, you know, people have grudges from 20 years ago and they don't get along? How's it look?
Man, DMV is a whole nother animal. So
you just handed a loaded gun.
Yeah, man. I could empty the clip easily on this, but I'm gonna try to stay a little bit political with it as much as possible because I don't care as much as I used to. So yeah. I'm gonna stay political with it. But no, everybody doesn't get along. And there's reasons why everybody doesn't get along. I mean, we have organizations that merge that hated each other, but now all of a sudden they love each other. I don't know. I don't get it. You know, back in the day there was issues when leagues merged and, you know, there was some cruddy stuff that went on. And, it's competition for sure around here with the eight-man leagues, or leagues period, just in general. And you've got a couple people that will say whatever they have to say or spread what they have to spread. And then you have a lot of people that have no idea what they're actually supporting because a lot of it has to do with today's day and age. I mean, unfortunately, it is what it is, but no, we don't get along. Our rules are the other leagues are go by UFFL. I don't even know what their rule book says. I don't really care to even know what it says. But yeah, so they all go by UFFL for the most part. And that's really what this area is for the most part is UFFL, right? Some of the younger ones play both or travel to all the flag world tournaments and play in those, but you still have the older ones that still rebel for some reason. I have no idea what the hatred is. I have no idea, but I don't really care to know either. But yeah, it is what it is. I mean, the problem with this area is there's a lot of people that this is their entire life is flag football. They wake up, they go to sleep, they live and breathe this. They have no other life besides flag football. You know, I mean, this is their NFL, right? And it's hard to beat somebody that does this 24/7, you know what I mean, when this isn't your main life. So you kind of at some point kind of concede to it and say, you know what, you're going to realize this doesn't pay your bills. You know what I mean? This, you know, when you're 40, 50 years old or you can't do this anymore, you're still going to be that grown little kid, you know, just still talking shit. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. Like, at some point – yeah, that's just kind of, I mean, how it feels. That a lot of people wake up in this area and this is their life and this they live and breathe this. And, you know, don't get me wrong. There was a time when I couldn't wait till Sunday, you know what I mean? But it didn't control my life, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what it is.
So would you say that the main focus of DMVFFL is really you still eight man, or are there so many more? Are you guys doing fives and fours and co-ed, and are you guys adding more formats, or do you still put a lot of attention on eight?
So the reality of it is with the DMVFFL is that we don't, Craig and I really aren't really involved anymore. It's really little Mikey and Mark that are really running it. And there hasn't been a whole lot been going on with it. But the focus is on co-ed, non-contact, contact, whatever it happens to be, whatever anybody wants. I think competing in the eight-man with the way that eight-man is not probably the smartest thing to do anymore because it doesn't fit us anymore. You know what I mean? We've kind of outgrown that. And there's three other eight-man leagues. Not, I mean, if we were to add us, we'd be four, all within like a 20-mile radius, right? Mm-hmm. So how many teams? So it's to the point where teams are playing in multiple leagues, right? So let's just say we had 16 teams, and another league had 16 teams. Eight of those teams are the same teams, right? You know what I mean? So there's not enough teams to go around in this area, I believe, anymore for eight man. But I do believe that there's growth for other areas as well.
Yeah, just, I mean, from, you know, my viewpoint, it just feels like eight-man takes up so much field space. Like you mentioned, there can be a lot of drama. I think there's a stigma that comes with it that there's more issues. You need more refs, so you got to pay more refs. There's just so much more to it where the direction and the future is headed towards five non-contact and non-contact plus. You can fit more fields. You can have more teams. So it just seems like, I don't know, to me it's common sense that eights is going to go, you know, fade away,
right?
And this is the future. I mean, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, like I said, eight-man is always my first love. It always has been, even still today. I do love eight man, but I don't see the growth with it. You know what I mean? I don't see the longevity with eight man anymore like I used to. And I think a lot of it has to do with the people that are involved with it. And that's probably why I don't think that it's going to go anywhere. I could be completely wrong. I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm just my opinion, my opinion and my gut tells me that it's only going to go so far, and you're going to be begging for places to play, especially from a national perspective, unless someone else starts it up. I mean, you can already see what the USL did, and they broke up into, like, the small ball doing this. And I don't really know the intricate parts of the UFL. I just hear bits and pieces of it. Again, once again, I don't really care too much to know. I mean, it's their business. They do whatever they do. But you can see it start. You can see it starting to break down, right? It costs a lot of money to run a tournament, you know, of any size. I mean, Jacob can tell you, East Coast Nationals. It takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of money to run an event like that. And if you don't have the team participation or you don't have that, then it can put you in the hole. You know what I mean? So at some point, you know, some of the people have already started to back out of the UFL because it's just not there, in my opinion. It has to go on a like a small, I want to say smaller scale, but it has to kind of like do bits and pieces of it. I can see somebody taking over 8-man completely. You know what I mean? And then kind of almost similar to what they're doing now, I guess, right? And taking over 8-man and doing a small ball and kind of breaking it down. But I agree with you is that the field space locally, it's not I won't say it's not an issue because it's hard to find fields that are cheap that you can have multiple fields at one location. 8-man is expensive to run. You know what I mean? And then the other issue is that there's, especially around here, there's so many tournaments. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, there's, I mean, even nationally, you see that how much money these teams have. You know what I mean?
Let's just say how much are they willing to fork out?
I mean, yeah. I don't know. We need to bring Sedan on here. Ask him.
Exactly.
Him and Jackie. Well, I mean, talk about fees. Right.
Yep.
And it's funny though, all the things that you're talking about in that region, I'm telling you, it's the same things that were happening in Colorado with 8-man. There were three or four leagues, and just like you're saying, maybe it's a 12 to 16 team league. 8 of those teams are playing in all 4 leagues. And so I remember when I was playing, my first game would be in one part of Denver at 8 in the morning, and I would have a game there, and then I would have to drive to the other side of Denver for my 10 o'clock game, you know, and it was – but we were basically just replaying each other 3 times in a day, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the stars of the main league in Colorado, they're all in their mid-40s. So I think that's – you make a really good point about the generation. Once those stars are gone, I don't know how that league will function.
And it's happened in so many states. I mean, Pennsylvania, I'm trying to think if Pennsylvania even has an 8-man team anymore, right? They had a couple before with Havoc. I think Havoc, and I think they had another one. I don't think they have anybody.
Oh, yeah. Right?
North Carolina, you have B.I. Who else do you guys have?
B.I. and the Cartel. Those are the two North Carolina teams right now that predominantly travel.
You used to have a few more, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Georgia. You had Young Crew, you had Wolfpack, you had Shockwave. I mean, how many of those teams still exist? They used to have leagues. You know what I mean?
Right.
So they're all – it's all – it's very tough. Around here, we're still got abundance of 8-man teams when it comes to other areas, right? So it's not like we're going to not have a league. We may be down to 2 leagues, maybe down to 1 league or whatever in due time, but I think it's always going to be a league, at least for a while. But as that, like you said, that younger generation comes in and more of them are growing up now, you know, in 15 years, we're going to be talking about the kids that are 5 years old right now, right? They're not going to know anything about contact. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So are they going to want to play 8-man contact? Are they going to even want to play 5-man contact? They might. Depends on if they play pound ball or high school or whatever, you know what I mean? But it's all going and shifting away. And if you're a kid and you're 8, 9, 10 years old and – what's going to be your – in flag football, if you're playing flag football, what's going to be like your idol? What are you going to look forward to? The Olympics.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Right?
Yep.
So, I mean, Olympics aren't offering that the contact. So you're not going to be like, hey, I want to play contact because I want to be a local legend. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
That's easily said because you are a local legend, Mike.
No,
actually,
I'm not.
You're a national legend, man.
I'm not.
Hey, so, Jacob, you have any more questions for Mike? I have a couple that, you know, I got to put him on the hot seat a little bit. But, Jacob, I want to give you the chance first.
Go ahead. Let it rip. Let him rip.
Okay. All right.
Let me find my hang up over here. Hold on. There it is. Leave.
So, Mike, I don't know if you know this, but Jacob had, you know, he talks about Camel City as the SEC of contact flag football, right? Do you think he is just in complete denial about how great Camel City is? Because they didn't win the big tournament in January, right? They lost to a DMV team. So why does Jacob continue to think that Camel City is the top dog in contact?
Huh.
Before you answer that, Mike, I'll go ahead and spit a couple of these words that just got thrown in my mouth out.
So ahead, this has always been the battle back and forth. So Maryland was always – Maryland DMV. DMV was always the mecca of five-man and eight-man for the longest time. But I do think that North Carolina caught up and surpassed by the number of quality teams that they have, right? And they still have them. They still have a lot of quality teams. I could sit here with Steve Burgeon and have an argument that Judah was better than RDU, hands down. I would have that argument 1,000 times over. And he's, you know, unfortunately, the only time we had a chance to play a national championship game, I couldn't play because I pulled my groin. I would argue that we were the best team ever, but Bex probably didn't have to take that crown. You know what I mean? It's hard to argue with their success. And I mean, yes, Judah beat them at the Nationals 1 year, but that was just 1 year. They're playing every year. They're playing for a national title. Like we used to back in the day, you know, we used to play, you know, out of 10 years, we finished top three, 10 years in a row playing for the national championship, five or six, and finishing second. Obviously, three times, and then finishing third, four, or something like that. We never got bounced early from any tournament until like my second to last year playing, and I had already checked out at that point. But I can't argue. I mean, it's a tough. I mean, I'd probably say it's we got some good teams around here though. But from a quantity standpoint, I mean, I got to give it to them right now. But yeah. Doesn't mean it won't change. I got to give it to them right now. But we do have some good teams.
No, definitely. I think if you look at – take the – you know, I think the best bracket we've had was 2 years ago, 3 years ago maybe. Mike, you and I were both still in contact together. Mm-hmm. If you look at that bracket, it was – I mean, it was full. It was nothing but, you know, DMV and Carolina teams. And then, of course, you snuck New Dynasty in there who went and, you know, that's the first time I ever met Nico. And he comes bebopping up, and I'm like, oh, man, they're about to get steamrolled.
Should you snuck Valley Goats in there, too?
Yeah. You know? I mean, you have all those quality teams. And, you know, that showed, the best of the best for both. I mean, all games were close, you know.
I think the best national championship game I've seen was Bex versus Judah. Of course, Judah won that one, but that was when Travis got involved and kicked out Judah player for no reason. Like this wild stuff going on there. This wild stuff. He just happened to be on the sideline. He just happened to be on the sideline as I think Chad got smoked by DJ, and as he was getting up, Travis said he said one of the Judah players threw a punch, and all three refs, G and all of them, were on there, didn't see a punch. Like,
yeah.
Travis saw it. He's the owner of the tournament, right?
You're right.
So what are you supposed to do? So I'm like, you know, what do I do? And he's like, well, he can't play. And I'm like, I mean, do you want to talk to the refs? You know what I mean? Because the refs are on the field. And I'll never forget that conversation I had with them and the refs. I'm like, look, I was like, he owns the tournament. I mean, you know what I mean? This is his call, you know, and they're like, he can't do that, Mike. I'm like, he can, though. I mean, like,
yeah.
It's his tournament. I mean, yeah. I was like, I don't agree with it. And I mean, they're like, you know, that's not right. I said, I agree. You know what I mean? But he just happened to be there and see something. But, but I think still that was the best national championship game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that sounds like a Dallas Cowboy, you know, answer, but hey,
the whole momentum. So if you remember, so I was with Jay. Do you remember JJ?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So me and him are in a cart, and we're, him and I are going back and forth because he's rooting for Bex and I'm rooting for Judah, right? Yeah. And it was the whole momentum of that game because Judah was up 13-0. Bex scored on that drive because of the penalty to make it 13-7, and they got the ball back. And it was right before half that he got ejected. They came and scored and made it 14-13. They took the lead. And it was like the whole momentum shift of the game. And you as a referee, you know, one call can shift the whole entire momentum of the game. Anyways, sure. What's the next question you got for me?
Go ahead, man. Keep firing away.
Okay, so, I misheard him, but from what I heard, Pat Alley said that he beat Judah in contact. Is that right?
You definitely heard wrong. Pat Alley has never beat Judah. Ever. And I can promise you he wouldn't today, even if I went back there to play quarterback. However, he did beat Arden. Maybe that's who he meant. But he never beat Judah. And you can bring him on this podcast. I've never played him.
Jacob, do you remember what team he said? I thought he said Judah, but
It was either Judah or RDU. I can't remember which one he said. But
he beat the brakes off RDU, and actually RDU won the national championship that year. He beat the brakes off of RDU, and they couldn't hit games of conflict that he couldn't play.
That's what they had to forfeit.
Yeah. Okay.
And mark my words, he would never beat Judah. He wouldn't leave the field in one piece.
Oh, man. That's going to be a show in itself. We need to bring Pat and Mike on here and let them two just go at it. I think that'd be hilarious.
I mean, if he don't, he's going to be screaming the whole time. So you're going to have to put him on mute.
All right. Well, I'll take you off the hot seat, Mike. I really appreciate you coming on and just talking about the DMV and you know, just talking about the history of contact and everything like that. Is there anything else, flag football or not related at all to flag, that you want to share with the audience?
No, not really. I mean, just respect the game. Just go out there, respect the game, respect the people that played before you. You know, I mean, they laid this, you know, foundation for you to be able to go out there and play this game. So, you know, treat the parks with respect. Treat the people that are running the event with respect. It takes a lot of work. I don't care who you are, you know, to run this. I don't care what organization you're with, whether or not I like you or not. It takes a lot of effort in the back end to make these things happen, whether or not you're dealing with the city, whether or not you're dealing with the police, whether or not you're dealing with, you know, the teams. I mean, you're like a psychiatrist out there, you know what I mean, to thousands of players. You know, give them a little bit more credit instead of, you know, they're not going to be perfect either. So, you know, give them a little bit more credit and respect them and respect the game.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, well, I appreciate you coming on, Mike, and man, we'll see you soon.
Peace.
Appreciate you, Mike.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Well, there we go, huh? That's the DMV in a nutshell.
That's the DMV in a nutshell. You know, Mike gave me my first opportunity when Camel City was just starting to get a little bit noticed. Mike and Craig reached out to me and Krista and put us on to our first big tournament, which ultimately led to me working with FFWCT at the time. So, you know, everything – you know, Mike took me in, mentored me, made sure, you know, I knew the right way to do things and how to do things and what all needs to be done and how to handle a lot of things. So, you know, I wouldn't be where I am without Mike. So yeah, I hope everybody realizes what an impact he is to the game, you know, whether it's just on the contact side or whether it's, you know, anything else to do with it. He's, you know, he's had a huge hand in flag football as a whole. So,
yeah. No, and it just to me, it's interesting to hear the same thing he's talking about with eights was the same frustrations I had with eights in Colorado. And so, you know, that's funny. You know, I think it's just the format. I think it's, unfortunately, I think it's in, you know, it's like an animal that's endangered. At some point, they are going to become extinct. You know, there's just no stopping it. And I think eights is in the same boat. It is an endangered format. And because that generation, you know, it's like the, you know, early 40s to 50s and they all want to keep playing and they want to keep it around. Well, guess what? Sooner or later, their knees are going to stop working. And
I think the simple answer to that situation is They still want to play with the old rules, but have the new attitude, which is does not mix. It's like Mike talked about. You know, you can't have players that are willing to, you know, knock your socks off, and then, you know, call you a bitch or, you know, hit somebody, you know, with something, you know, and be ready to fight. You can't do both. You've got to, if you want to play hard and tough and rough and all that stuff, you've got to be able to have the sportsmanship to back it and to be able to realize that we're playing a game. We're not out there trying to kill each other.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a good point. I like to hear him say that they should just get rid of triple threats.
It'll never happen, man.
You don't hear many contact guys say that, though, you know, so it's nice to hear that. All right, so anything else you want to talk about as far as DMV goes?
No, I think we covered a lot.
All right, cool. It sounded like he said Judah beat Bex the last time they played. Is that what I got? No.
Judah did not beat Bex a lot. At Worlds, maybe, in 2000. Okay. They beat them in 2019. It was either 2018 or 2019 was the year. That was the last time Bex, outside of this year, lost a national or world championship.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. I know you're sensitive. I just want to.
You know. I just want to clarify. Someone else said it. But let's keep rolling.
All right. So I've been wanting to talk about this for a couple weeks, Jacob. I sent you a video, and it's an organization out of California. Okay. And hey, more power to them. They put together a huge production for their playoffs. When they have tournaments, they do this. They live stream. Now, I was a part of it when I was out there. It was a little frustrating for me as an official because I had to wear this big, like, I felt like it was like a Navy SEAL headset. Like, like it was really big and intense. And going on in my ear the entire game was somebody that didn't know anything about football. So they were literally just asking me questions whenever they wanted to. So for example, like, there's that QB clock that's continuing to run. So I'm trying to count out the QB clock. And at one point, I stopped counting because the lady in my ear was like, oh, on the last drive, did they score two or was it a one? And I'm like, thankfully, one of the players that noticed that I stopped counting, he like came up to me. He's like, did you stop counting? And I was like, yeah, my bad. Like, I'm like, I got numbers just being, you know, jammed in my ear right now. So, right. So they do this live stream on YouTube. It's cool for the players. And I know that they pay more to be in that league because of that opportunity. Now, something that they also have as a part of that live stream is instant replay. And I know we talked about it, as far as like, hey, we saw the Olympics this past summer. Everything had instant replay. Volleyball had instant replay. I mean, wrestling. There was an instant replay, which just blows me away. You know, but so if that's what the Olympics does and the IOC wants instant replay, it'll probably happen with flag football. Well, here is a league that is doing it currently. They're limited to, so let me explain their kind of stipulation behind it. It's one per game. And okay. if they lose the replay challenge, they lose a timeout.
Okay.
So that's the stipulation. Now this was a championship. Oh, go ahead.
If they're out of timeouts, can they still challenge?
They can. Yeah.
Okay.
Because they get one challenge that's essentially the challenge is outside of their timeouts.
Okay.
Yeah. So they get the challenge, and then either they're not losing a timeout because they won the challenge, or they're losing a timeout because they lost it.
Right.
So this was their pro championship game. Really exciting game, back and forth. This was an important play for sure. Now, the offense was I'd say maybe on the 10, maybe 8-yard line, something like that. Quarterback rolls to the right. He throws it. Now, the ball's already in the air. The receiver has caught the ball. And because of the way he caught it, he's making a diving motion, momentum motion into the end zone. Now, when the ball got caught and he makes that motion, the official had blown the whistle for a sack.
So the
offense challenge, they put their challenge for the sack, and that's what, you know, that's where their issue is. They say, you know, it wasn't a sack. Okay, so they go back, and I'm telling you, this probably took, and I'm not exaggerating, this probably took 6 or 7 minutes before they finally made the decision. Now, me watching it on YouTube, now they might have had another angle that I didn't see. There was a player in front of the camera angle from what they were showing. I don't know if it was really necessarily enough video evidence to overturn it. But again, maybe they had something else. They overturned it. They said, okay, you know, it wasn't a sack. So now they got to decide, okay, well, what happened to finish the play? Well, he did stretch out, and he did get into the end zone. But now a very smart veteran DB on the defense is saying, well, we heard a whistle, so we stopped. So now he's almost getting a free challenge out of this because he's arguing so much, and he's like, we heard the whistle, we stopped, that's an inadvertent whistle, so this touchdown shouldn't count. Now they're going back, and now they're reviewing when the whistle happened. So it's almost like the offense challenge, and then the defense got a free challenge out of it. So then what they ended up deciding was basically it was going to be, because it was an inadvertent whistle, the offense got to decide. They could replay the down, which would have been second and goal, or they could take it on the 1-yard line, and it would have been third and goal. So they replay it, and they score the next play, piece of cake, all this. The whole process took well over 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Explaining all that to you, you watching the video, how do you feel about that being a part of flag football right now? Not in the Olympics, but right now.
You ever heard the phrase, you're doing too much? That's all this is. You know, at the end of the day, this is – so let's also be clear. This league's in Hollywood. You have Hollywood production crews. Guys use this probably as something they can put on their resume to say, hey, look what I can do with a camera. It's not cheap cameras. I mean, like, that's – we'll give these guys their credit. Like, they're putting a lot into this.
For sure.
But also, here's one question. Who decide, based on the instant replays, who makes the decision whether the call stands or it's reversed? Is it the official?
Okay, so when I was there and I was a part of a couple instant replays, I was a part of watching the video.
Yeah.
And after the video, I made the decision as the crew chief. What it looked like in this, the officials were not involved at all. They weren't watching the video. So I have no clue. Yeah.
Somebody else. Making a decision on the field for the referee. So we're already asking recreational officials who are working a Hollywood style, like Hollywood level camera crew game.
Yeah.
To make a call, and when they get it wrong, somebody else is going to overturn them. So the players are going to immediately you see where I'm going with this? You're giving no confidence to the officials. You're saying that, hey, if the officials get it wrong, somebody else is going to fix it for you if you have a challenge. And if you don't, well, it's just sorry for your luck. You need to do better. I personally hate instant replay. When in Orlando this past weekend, we had an issue where a referee, you know, I forget what the play was. I think it was like if they were in or out, called the player out. Apparently he was in on camera. You know, his positioning, I think it was a 2-man crew. He had to do the best he could with what he had.
And the parents are running over, oh, we got it on camera, we got it on camera. And it's like, well, we can't look at that. So by the time I get up there, they've already shown the official. He's saying that he was wrong. And they're wanting me to reverse it. And this is after the game's done. And I said, guys, we can't look at that. And they're like, well, we want to actually look at it. I said, I don't want to look at it. I have no interest in looking at it because it doesn't benefit me or benefit any of my decisions. If you don't have confidence in your officials to the point where you need cameras and stuff like that, the only thing that camera does is gives you something to go back and look at, and for you to show your friends or whatever that, hey, you play flag football. At the end of the day, like, I don't like cameras on the field. I get it. Yeah. I understand it. And I know it's a necessary thing to promote marketing and show off your leagues. I mean, we do it in Camel City, and I love it. You know, I love what it does. But on the flip side, it puts officials on the hot seat constantly. It puts your league on the hot seat when people come back to you and go, well, this play, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, I don't normally complain, but, you know, Tom Smith, you know, called me out here and I was definitely in. I don't agree with it. You know, I don't think you should. If you have instant replay, that means you don't trust your officials. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
If you don't trust your if I'm an official, I'm not working for you if you have instant replay, because that tells me that you don't trust me. You know, some people have that dollar amount. They're willing to, you know, everybody has their number. But at the end of the day, I don't think it instills trust in your officials, and it shows the players that you shouldn't trust the officials.
Yeah. Well, and I just feel like in this situation, like I said, I feel like the defense got a free challenge out of it. Sure. Because basically what happened is once the first challenge was, and that sack was overturned, then the defense is like, they're just going crazy with talking to the officials and like, well, hold on. Well, if this happened, and they were not stopping, you know? And so it really spilled over. Like I said, this was a really good game. It was really exciting. Ultimately, that sack did not decide anything because the next play they scored. It was meaningless, and it wasted so much time. Plus, what happened is that defense, because then there was this inadvertent whistle and then a score, and you know, and then there was an issue with the two-point conversion after that touchdown. There was a player, and he's one of the best players in that league. He ends up he's so frustrated at this point that all of this just happened when the game was very close that he's not stopping with the official and he gets thrown out of the game.
Yep.
And, you know, and then at that point, you know what happens when, I mean, I've had a teammate get thrown out of a game and it just like the momentum, you lose it all. And, and all the energy that was put to try to get this player to calm down and try to, you know, get him off the field and take, you know, whatever it is, you've lost your momentum. The other team is probably going to win, you know? And so, yeah, was this instant replay really worth all that when you had two great teams that were playing for a championship? And you just let them play. I love the live streaming. For me, I love the ability to be able to turn on YouTube on a Sunday night and watch a live stream game and be able to watch, okay, why did the official throw this flag? And like, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I agree. I don't think instant replay, I don't think we're ready for it. If NBC, you know, wants to do it in the Olympics, you know, that's a very different situation. I
mean, let's even go back and look at what happened in Canton back in July with NFL flag. You know, the youth, they had the youth tournament on ESPN. That was really cool for the kids. It was great. You had an official miss a call. And it happens. No. Officials miss calls. They're not perfect. If they were perfect, we'd be robots and you'd be at a whole other level. However, official missed a call on the field, and what did ESPN do? They highlighted it. They replayed it probably five or six times, and the commentators are going, well, I don't know. You know, all it does is it completely discredits your crew right there on the field, because all it takes is Tim's mom sitting in the stands watching it on her phone trying to send to Aunt Susan, oh, look, little Johnny's on ESPN. And then she comes across that replay. You got a riot starting.
Yeah.
Is that actually going to happen? Probably not. But could it happen? Yes. It's just little things like that that are just not necessary. You know, I think they do a pretty good job down at the Pro Bowl when they have the player when they have the youth tournaments in the stands and they show them on ESPN there. They do a pretty good job of just keeping things moving. They'll flash a replay so that way you can see what happened if you missed it, and then they keep going. You know, they don't harp on it like they did in Canton. And I Canton really sold it for me that I did not like it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you talk about a riot breaking out. Well, look what just happened with the Texas game. I mean, you know, that was an entire fan base that just – they kind of took control of the game because what? They saw it on the Jumbotron.
Yep.
And they all decided that they were expert officials and they knew what they were talking about. And they were all, you know, a little intoxicated probably at that point.
No way.
You know.
College kids.
So, goes back to my Hennessy and weed comment, you know, that everybody likes. It just
1998, baby.
So, no, well, I just wanted to hear your opinion on it. It was, you know, as I was watching it, I'm like, oh, we got to talk about this because, yeah, I mean, we're, you know, in the next few years, if every other sport, you know, is going to have instant replay in the Olympics, I'm pretty convinced that flag football will have it as well. And so I just hope that they really try to, you know, manage it the best they can. You know, I'm sure with the NFL, you know, the NFL has they've kind of got the system in place already as far as that goes. So it'll probably be pretty similar to that, I would guess. But so moving on, I just want to bring something up, and this, I don't know if you heard about this in Orlando. I did get, you know, just had a conversation with an official from Orlando that it happened in the game. And so I know we've talked about this rule before. I just want to bring up the situation because I think it is a situation that is truly like a 50-50, depends on the angle, judgment call. But I just want to really hear your opinion on this, Jacob. So it really comes down to the QB and the rusher. You know, QB is not doing anything crazy. Like it's not a sidearm throw. It's their normal motion. They're not like sticking their body out to try to make contact. This is a normal quarterback motion. The rusher is not doing anything crazy either, but they are going in and the elbow of the quarterback hits the head of the rusher. What is that?
So let's talk about it. So what our rule book says, pulling it up right now, it's a catch 22 because it's all about how you view it as an official, right?
Yeah.
So we say that the passer has we say in general, defensive players may not crash the quarterback's throwing arm, shoulder, body, even if the ball is touched first. We'll apply the holder's kicker. That's talking about eights, obviously. Quarterback's right to step in. It is a quarterback's right to step into a throw and the rusher's duty to avoid contact. If contact's significant, forceful, at the discretion of the officials, it can be deemed as roughing the passer. An insignificant brush by may be allowed by the referee, but is not guaranteed. Let's see, making contact with the quarterback while blocking a pass or attempting to block a pass may result in roughing the passer. Roughing the passer will not be enforced if a quarterback initiates contact with a defensive player while in their throwing motion. So, for example, during the passer's follow-through, the player's arm makes contact with the opponent's hand, arm, shoulder. In this instance, the impetus of the contact is the action of the quarterback and not the defender. It's a judgment call. So you're looking for intent, right? If the quarterback's follow through leads into the rusher and the rusher's not doing anything to make an attempt at the ball, at the arm, anything like that, then it's you're gonna have contact on the offense or just no call. But if the rusher's coming hands up and they're running and they run into the elbow, they crash the elbow, or they, you know, anything like that, then you've got roughing. I personally don't believe in calling roughing the passer if you don't hit the arm. If there's significant contact, I believe in calling contact versus roughing the passer, because roughing the passer is a more significant penalty. But that's just me.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I've had a few different situations. I mean, I think, yeah, like you're saying, even a rusher's going up like this and they make it, it's like the easiest call in the world, right? That's right. Roughing. I think if they try to, you know, body up, wrap up in, you know, with quarterback, you're going to get roughing there, I feel like. You know, but goofy situations happen where I've seen like a quarterback that's got a big belly and they throw their belly into the, you know, into the rusher. And it's in that situation, it's like, oh, this is kind of illegal contact on the offense in that, because that's not their normal throwing motion. They're, you know, they're trying to draw that roughing. The other thing that I've seen, and I had a rusher pointed out to me, is that there was a quarterback that as they threw, they would swing their leg around to try to trip the rusher. And And so, but it's not something you notice, you know, that you're looking at so many other things, and it was the rusher that pointed out to me, you know, and so that's another, you know, it's a little contact right on the offense.
Absolutely. I mean, you think, well, I mean, you probably have an unsportsmanlike on it, to be honest with you.
Unsportsmanlike, yeah.
You know, cause I'm not, that's not okay at any level. I think the biggest thing is, again, like, it's like you just said, we're looking at so many other things. The main focus is you're looking at from the quarterback's waist up, trying to make sure they don't get hit, they don't get their arm hit, you know, things like that. You're not thinking about so the quarterback kicks his foot out. I mean, you'll probably catch it when you start paying attention to it a little bit more. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, first glance, that's not what you're looking for. So when people do stuff like that, that's just play the game clean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I just think, you know, it's just a scenario, unfortunately, where, like, in this situation this past weekend, the rusher, you know, got a nice little goose egg. The QB had a cut on their elbow. And they both are looking at the official like, where's the call, you know? And I think in that situation, the official, you know, looked at it like, that was a brush by situation. I'm not calling it, you know, and that was their decision. You know, I think that's good, I guess, maybe to appease both players. You could have offsetting penalties if you wanted to do it that way. Right. You know, I guess it kind of depends. But, I mean, the other thing is I think at this point rushers are so fast and they're getting to the quarterback so quickly. Rushers should be wearing some sort of protection up here, whether it's the, you know, the little brim headgear or the full one, just to protect from that. I mean, incidental contact's going to happen, and you know, your head is definitely, you know, could definitely get split open by an elbow for sure.
See, you know, the funny thing is, like, as a player, I'm against them. I don't like having stuff over my head like that. I feel like it's too constricting. Yeah. As a parent, 1,000% if my daughter was playing, I want her wearing that. So
yeah.
I completely understand both sides of the argument.
Yeah. I mean, I hated wearing a mouthpiece when I was on the line, you know, it just,
I didn't wear one at all.
Yeah.
I couldn't, man. All I ended up doing was just chewing on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the moment it landed on the ground, like, why do I want to pick that up and put it in my mouth again?
And, like, I mean, you know, God made dirt and dirt don't hurt. So.
For sure. All right, cool. Well, I appreciate that explanation. Anything else you want to talk about as far as Orlando goes? Any other recap?
Orlando was fun, man. It's you know, we got to see the high school sevens play on the condensed field for the first time. That went well. You know, it was primarily a big youth tournament. You know, the adults, it was very small, but youth, you know, youth came and took over and had a really good tournament. I feel like it's a lot of fun seeing these kids get out and see a lot of talented kids. You know, I think the kind of the funny thing for me was to be able to watch, and you watch some of these playoff brackets and they go, you know, it'd be like quarterfinal 28-0, other side of the bracket quarterfinal 28-0, semifinals would be 28-0, and they get to a championship game, and that's when the good play was. You know, we're used to, I feel like personally on the adult level, our semifinal games are way better than our championships for the most part. Some championships are really good, but for the most part, your semifinal games, those final four games, those are the ones that are really good.
For these kids and youth, it was the championship game. So, no, I think overall, like I said, it was a good tournament. It was a lot of fun. Shout out to Cassie for pulling it off and getting all these kids together and all these teams together and bringing it all together as one.
You think that condensed field for sevens, did it change how sevens looked at all? Or
I think it changed some game plans. You could hear them on the sidelines, like the chatter and stuff. You could hear them saying, you know, we can't do this because of this. And you also saw coaches that didn't read. You know, coaches they're asking questions and they're expecting things like on fourth down to midfield that if the team doesn't convert, they're getting the ball back right there. And we have, you know, we've a couple times had to tell them, no, that's not the case. Read the rule book. Read the rule book. You know, treat it like a five-man adult field. You know, it's a touchback. We're going to keep things moving. By the time we got to bracket play, the pool play was really where they were trying to figure things out. When we got to bracket play, that's when a lot of teams were figuring it out. They were able to be successful. You could see the success and how things were changing and things were clicking. And really, I think they overthought the small field. And once they realized they could just play their game, they just had to just shorten the field just a hair. You know, you're already not sending a 17-year-old girl on a 40-yard post route. You know, that's not a realistic thing. So you just bring them in just a hair and, you know, everything's there.
And, you know, it's so funny, you know, kind of back to how AIDS contact is stuck in their mindset. Well, Southern California, they are stuck in their sixes. They've got the best format ever. Well, okay, so this is, look how easy it was for teenagers to adapt to the field change. In Southern California, they're actually making the field bigger for their format. They want more space. But I think that goes back to, you know, to what Ed said last week as far as like, hey, sometimes they just want, they want 33 touchdowns in a 10-game season. Like, that's what's important to them. And I guess if you got the money to invest into a hobby like that, by all means. I don't think that that's going to get you a spot on the Olympic team, though.
No, not at all. It's not even going to get you looked at. Not going to get you looked at all.
So with Orlando, another tournament, well, sure enough, the voters, they paid attention. And we had a new top 25 drop tonight. Jacob, did you get a chance to look at the top 10 at all?
I took a glance at it, man. I think, you know, you got some surprises. Some people, I think you saw where the voters are coming from, you know, where geographically they are. I think that makes a little more sense why, you know, we're seeing some of the things the way they are, which is cool. I mean, you know, considering the top three are all on the West Coast. I think that plays a factor, but then again, this isn't like you don't earn points by doing certain things. This is an opinion based vote, so I think that's what people miss with it, and you know, people's complaints with this one shouldn't be here, this shouldn't count for this. This is people's opinions, and you know, one person's opinion is not going to be the same as somebody else's. So to see, you know, this has dropped on IG, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Cool. So yeah, to see Lace Up as number one, you know, that's cool. I think that's really cool. Is it, you know, for fact of matter, is that the case? Maybe not. Maybe if you got, you know, if you have a balance, you know, how we get there, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, looking at this list, this is a pretty good list. I think it's pretty recent. It stays within, like, you know, what the last two tournaments have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I think there's a few things that, you know, the voters were able to look at. Not only are they looking at, the last two, you know, San Diego, Orlando, they're looking at those tournaments, but just taking a look at the winners overall of 2024, you know, if you look at who has actually won tournaments, those names that we've been used to over the last few years, whether it's Sick-Witted or Wet and Dirty or, you know, teams like that, well, they haven't won a tournament, you know? And so, yeah, maybe they're always in the conversation. Maybe they're always in those exciting Final Four games. but they're not winning them. And so yeah. I think when the voters come down to it and they have this giant pool of men's, women's, co-ed, they've got contact, non-contact, fours all the way to eights co-ed, that's a lot to look at, and you can only pick 25 teams.
Well, I mean, my list had 30 to start off with this past time, so I mean...
Yeah, you know, and I also think that it's interesting to see. I also think it's interesting to see we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 women's teams now are on here. We have 2 co-ed teams, and then we got the three guys teams in New Dynasty, Ronin, and YTG. And, you know, I think that's interesting as well, is that this is not, just like you said, this is not a normal one where, you know, or points matter or things like that. This is everybody grouped together. So it's not like New Dynasty and Let's Up are ever going to play each other to decide who should have the number one spot.
Right.
You know, they are in their respective things. Now, I think looking at this list, maybe why Lace Up... You know, I can only speculate. Maybe why Lace Up ended up with the number one spot is they haven't really lost a tournament that they've been in. Now they have. They didn't go to San Diego. They didn't go to Orlando, but they dominated Contact in Nashville, where they beat Level Up, and that was something that, you know, you, me, and Pat were looking forward to. Level Up from the East Coast, Lace Up from the West Coast. Who is going to win in a women's Contact game? Mm-hmm. And Lace Up beat Level Up in the, you know, national championship in Nashville. They also won at Worlds. And so, and then as well in Vegas, they won. So, you know, so, and then I think that in general, if you look at the first place votes, it's a lot, you know, initially when this first started having voters, everybody put YTG. And it was like all but one voter put YTG, and that was it. And now that we have a good chunk of voters, we have 34 voters, the first place votes are kind of spread out. I mean, all but two teams got at least one first place vote. And I think maybe that's because YTG is they're beatable now.
Whoa.
I mean,
let's not start throwing those shots. I think.
I mean, they lost to Curry Bombshells in co-ed in Nashville, right?
Okay.
they didn't win. There was another format they lost in Nashville to. Was it Self-Made that they lost to?
Was it Gauntlet?
No. YTG was not technically in Gauntlet.
It was TDR.
It was like Flag Beast is what they were called.
Oh, yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like Flag Beast against DNA. So the other thing is that there's a lot of these tournaments where a lot of YTG players play on Los Reyes, or they play on, you know, different teams. So,
and that's the thing to keep in mind, too. I mean, take San Diego. They weren't there. Orlando, they weren't there. Were their players there? Absolutely. But they they weren't there playing as YTG. So there's probably a bit of that too. So you gotta take all things into consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So do you think, just, you know, throwing it out there as far as Contact goes, do you think YTG is the best five Contact team out there?
I mean, it's tough to argue against that. They've won the last two biggest Contact tournaments this year.
Yeah. Well, and East Coast Nationals and Nashville, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, So, I mean, it's tough to argue right now. I think at Worlds, it's going to be a big test to see, you know, Worlds brings the best out of Bex. Worlds brings the best out of Free Smoke. Those right now are my top two teams, just going in from last year. But you can't discredit them. I mean, if they play five Contact, it'll be interesting to see how it all shapes out.
Yeah. You know, I know I asked Coop this question when he was on the show, if there's more weight to a specific division. And you know, I think that maybe the voters do look at some of that, you know, as well, as far as what format, you know, kind of, you know, carries more weight. Now, from a contact standpoint, is six's contact as important as five's contact, in your opinion?
No.
And I think that shows in this top 25, right? The Bears have dominated six's contact, but they got an honorable mention.
Right. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, who cares about – I mean, not being funny, sixes isn't the premier format. Five contacts, the premier format. Five non-contacts, the premier format. You know, it's like trying to make the argument for air it out. You know, air it out's not a premier format. Fours has turned in, has become not a premier format. Gauntlet, same thing. These extra formats, they're great to play and people enjoy them. And I think they're good for the game to keep people playing. But when it comes to notoriety and weight, they're looking at five contact, five non-contact. They're looking at those formats and saying, what are you doing here? This is where the cream of the crop's playing. What are you doing here? Where are you finishing here?
Yeah. No, for sure. Well, it's been a lot of fun. I like to see, you know, we're getting more voters every month, which is cool. My challenge to the East Coast and to Florida, to Texas, if you think that your teams are, you know, not getting the votes, well, then you should talk to the media in your state or the directors in your state, because they don't reach out to us to be a part of this. So, you know, that's kind of what's happening. Just like you said, geographically, it's probably heavy on the West Coast. Well, yeah, guess what? All those Hollywood media, you know, people that are excited about flag football, they're excited it's coming to LA. They also want to put their opinion out there. So, so that does reflect for sure. Jacob, any final thoughts for the night?
Man, I think I'm just going to keep it short and sweet, you know. The last couple of weeks we've kind of talked about, you know, respecting officials and showing them that respect. Just, you know, that goes a lot right along with trying to bait an official into things. Don't, you know, if you have an issue and if you feel like, you know, you can't handle it there, don't continue to try to bait an official into doing something and get an official out of character. But otherwise, man, that's all I've got. You know, Orlando was a ton of fun. You know, I appreciate everybody and how they, you know, how they perceived us there and how they treated us. It's always a good time to go and see everybody down in Florida. And just, you know, now just got Camel City playoffs this weekend.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because my guys at Bex Plus One, I just feel like they're going to dominate this weekend. Like, who can really beat Bex in Camel City?
Yeah. Flipped a switch, huh? Those are your guys, huh?
Well, just like New Dynasty are your guys.
Oh, okay. So that's what we're doing.
Right. I mean, you said they were.
I'm not denying it, but you went from being, you know, public enemy number one to now those are my guys.
I mean, you know, anybody can beat Vanderbilt is all I'm saying. But, you know, until you can beat the mecca, until the SEC can beat the mecca of contact flag football, I don't want to hear it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, you got any final thoughts?
No, you know, my final thoughts is, you know, I'm just, I got worlds on my mind. I'm excited for the fact that there's going to be so many different countries represented, not you know, teams that are going to be different countries, but the officials that are coming internationally to this tournament is so exciting. That's what makes this a world championship. I'm sorry, I don't want to hear anybody else talk about them having a world championship. It is happening in Tampa in January, and the officials are going to show that. And I hope people are prepared for the fact that, hey, you know, they can cuss at you in their own language, and you're probably not going to understand what they're saying. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about that myself. You know, I think we've got a really cool crew that we're building up for this, and you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing how this all works.
Yeah, for sure. So. That being said, I know you're going to be busy this weekend, but We're back on the road. Starting. I don't know why we decided to have a road trip in the middle, late fall, early winter. Because we're going to start to...
Beliefs change, man. That's why.
Okay. Well, that's a good point. So I don't know where we're headed from here. I forget. I know you've got the roadmap. You planned it all out. You're really good at all of that. So I'm just going to... I'm just trusting you. I feel like this week I need to go get some blue crab from somewhere so I can just try it out. But blue you know that yeah, you've had blue crab?
Yeah, absolutely. You have it?
Oh. No, sorry, my bad. The first time I'd ever been to the DMV was last May. So.
And that doesn't count. That doesn't count. That's Richmond. What? Richmond's not in the DMV.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, we're not all as cool as you.
They'll tell you that, too.
All right. Well, that being said, we are continuing to get subscribers on YouTube. Every week we have more subscribers, and that's what we want. We want people to get the full, the full viewing experience. This is like, YouTube is like the IMAX of this podcast. Like, if you really want to get immersed in what's going on with this podcast, you gotta watch it on YouTube. So subscribe to us so that you get notifications when we post a new episode. Usually it's Thursday nights, but sometimes we move it around depending on our road trip. But we are everywhere else. We are on every platform you can listen to a podcast on. We are on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Threads. We are all over the place. We also have merch available, so you just go on the Instagram and hit the link tree, and you can find us all over the place. And most of all, either us or guests that have been on this show are probably going to be at a tournament you'll be playing in. So say what's up to us. Tell us what you think about the show. Tell us how much you hate us talking about these boring rules because you're not listening anyway. Or if you've got a crazy situation that comes up, reach out to us, send it to us so we can talk about it. So you can get an explanation and I will make sure that I get that clip and I send it out so you can hear about it. I think it's been a really easy way for local officials to be able to say, hey, I explained it to you, black and white in the rule book, but here's two guys that are talking exactly how it looks. So I don't know. I think that's been a good addition. And so, players, that's the best way to get involved in the show is send us crazy scenarios that happen, in your game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes, so I just checked. We're at 85 subscribers right now. It may seem like, well, that's a big deal for us. Let's try next week. Let's hit 100. I think that'd be really cool. The next time we come back on, let's hit 100. There's 15 people out there who haven't hit that subscribe button. Take 2 seconds and hit it. And you don't even have to, it doesn't notify you or anything. It's YouTube. So just hit that subscribe button. Just keep it moving.
Yeah. Just keep it moving.
Clock's running, baby.
There we go. All right, man. Well, let's get back on the road and y'all have a good night.
You too. See you, man.